From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Santa Clara.
Santa Cruz.
Union City.
Hayward.
San Francisco.
I'm from Fremont.
Yo, I'm San Jose, just downtown.
Coming up, we'll hear about people who face losing their longtime homes.
This is setting a precedent of, you know, the phrase that's often been used is cannibalizing the city's rental housing stock.
Then we'll hear a young woman's story of looking for a place she can call her home.
This is like my fourth time moving in 2 years. I want to be able to make it.
And we'll linger with an instrument that brought neighbors together as it played its final notes.
First it was with my parents, and then it was with me and my children growing up. And now it belongs to Half Moon Bay, and soon it will belong to the universe.
Stay with us for Cross Currents. If you've tried to find a place to live in the city lately, or even if you know someone who knows someone trying to find a place to live, you'll have heard that San Francisco has a housing crisis. In large buildings, the average apartment rent tops $2,500 a month. Close to 30,000 people are on the public housing wait list, and city officials recently green-lighted 220-square-foot micro-apartments in the hopes of easing the crunch. Given all that, it might surprise you that most housing in the city is actually rent-controlled. That means landlords can only raise rent by a limited percentage every year. For many of the city's longtime residents, rent control is the only thing that allows them to stay in their homes. But there's a way for landlords to circumvent it. It's a 1986 law called the Ellis Act. The Ellis Act allows landlords to evict tenants if they plan to convert the building to a different use, for example, to move in themselves. In practice, it's often used to put buildings on the market at prices that the former tenants couldn't afford. The last time Ellis Act evictions spiked was during the late 90s tech boom. There were 440 of them just between 1999 and 2000. A new investigation by San Francisco Bay Guardian reporters Rebecca Bowe and Dylan Tokar finds that our current tech boom is creating similar issues. This past year saw 81 Ellis Act evictions, more than double the year before. Rebecca Bowe spoke with KALW's executive editor Ben Trefney about what's been happening.
You have renters who have been there for a long time, and because of rent control, they're paying less than market rate by quite a lot. And so a lot of times you have situations where they effectively have a target inscribed on their backs, because if the landlords were to convert these properties to market rate or to convert them to tenancies in common or condominiums, then they could sell them for top dollar or rent them for much higher.
Mm-hmm. So you spoke with people from all different parts of San Francisco, really. This isn't just targeted. The evictions that are happening are not just specific to one neighborhood. They're kind of everywhere. What's an example of somebody who you profiled in your piece?
You know, there was one building in the Inner Sunset, and I spoke with some of the tenants there. The couple that I spoke with had been there for almost 20 years. They love classic rock. They're huge music fans. They fell in love at a concert in San Francisco years ago. And, you know, they had made a home there. They loved the neighborhood, you know, enjoyed being in the park. Their entire, you know, world and community really revolves around this San Francisco neighborhood. And, you know, one thing that they really stressed to me was that after receiving a notice that they might end up having to leave under an Ellis Act eviction, their biggest fear was that they would end up having to leave San Francisco because they weren't actually in a position to afford renting another unit in the city.
So the fate of some people like that, and for other people who may not know that they're subject to potential eviction down the line, is largely in the hands of city officials who are considering different legislation, such as changing the rules on condo conversions. And the mayor, in your article, there's some suggestions that he is really looking to support the incoming tech industry, the business industry, and a lot of the choices that he's made, including the tax changes for companies such as Twitter to come into the city, and then the people who might work for these would seem to support this new money coming into the city. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the discussions that are happening now have to do with a proposal that was put forward by supervisors Wiener and Farrell, which would allow for the conversion of, I think, somewhere around 2,000 TIC units to condominiums. And the concern there that has been raised by housing advocates is that this would permanently remove housing from the rental market that could potentially still be used as rental housing, and it would still potentially be subjected to rent control. But once you convert it to condominiums, they are no longer subjected to rent control. And so the fear here is that this is sort of setting a precedent of, you know, the phrase that's often been used is cannibalizing the city's, you know, rental housing stock. So these are sort of the points that have been raised. It's extraordinarily controversial, as you can imagine. And from what we have heard, it sounds like there are a lot of kind of behind-the-scenes negotiations. And it's a tough place for, you know, these supervisors to be because, of course, anybody who votes in favor of converting these 2,000 units is not going to be looked upon favorably by tenants.
But a vote for the condo conversion would be appealing to those people in San Francisco who are looking to make a less expensive purchase, maybe make buying a house or a condo at least affordable in a city where housing is so unaffordable.
Yeah, and I think that you know, for the supervisors who are going to be the swing votes on this particular proposal, it's sort of a question of which side are they on.
That was San Francisco Bay Guardian reporter Rebecca Bowe speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. You'll find a link to that article at our website. It's kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. While some property owners are taking advantage of the tech bubble to put their buildings on the market, some are trying to base their decisions on other factors. In this piece from our archives, KALW's Leela Day met one owner who said she'd resist the urge to cash in on the rental wars. Leela met her on the day her resolve was most tested, the day of her open house.
Okay. It's not a studio and it's not a one bedroom. We have a separate kitchen. It's been upgraded, new appliances.
Darlene Carpetillo owns this building in San Francisco's Noe Valley. She's just had a tenant move out. That means she can offer the apartment at market price, which works out in her favor. You see, of the 16 units, all but three are rent controlled, with tenants paying between $400 and $700 per month. But this apartment is going for
$1,300 a month. It is reasonable because we prefer our tenants to stay.
Darlene's preparing for an open house. She's confident that in about an hour, she'll get at least 50 applicants.
Today what's going to happen is it's going to be utter mayhem with applications, credit reports and so forth, and I will definitely get back to everybody, and I will definitely get it rented by today. Are you here to see the apartment? All right, come on up. It's on the first floor.
The open house has officially begun, and a crowd of people are gathered at the front door. Many are dressed as they would before a job interview. Women wearing colorful skirts and pumps, the men wearing clean t-shirts and tennis shoes instead of flip-flops. Most seem to be under 30. I asked several of them to give me a sense of what it takes to succeed in today's rental market.
If you know you want something, you have to just be prepared.
I would like to think I have the edge there because I make some real money, but it doesn't seem to be the case.
Things will be up on Craigslist for a day, open houses the next day, and then the decision will have been made the next day after.
And it's painful because it's almost like applying for a job, because you tell them about yourself, you tell them how you're a good fit, and it's a pretty painful process.
Pay stubs, credit report, and just my application, and a good attitude.
I'm totally prepared. Credit report, copy of my driver's license, application, pay stubs.
I guess I wasn't prepared. I didn't realize that there would be so many people with all the, you know, application completed. I mean, I do have, you know, full-time job, stable income, but it seems like a lot of people are, you know, like, oh, I work at Stanford, or like, you know.
I work at Stanford University, which is a little bit of a commute, but I want to live up in the city really bad.
What's going to set you apart? Will she remember me? How do they make their decision? I don't know. You want to make it as easy for the landlord as possible. Like, I noticed somebody mentioned that they brought their pay stubs. I was like, oh, that's a great idea. You know, proof that you're legit, basically.
One by one, applicants file into the tiny apartment unit, cramming into the bathroom to inspect the drawers, eyeing the closet space and pointing out how they would arrange their furniture. I squeeze into the kitchen with the building owner, Darlene. A line has formed in front of her that wraps along the wall, out the kitchen door, and down the hallway to the front door of the apartment. Applicants wait for a chance to shake her hand, to make some sort of impression, or even to offer more money.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
I do. Would you take higher than what you offer?
Pardon me?
Would you take a higher bid?
No, that's not there.
How many people asked to pay over what you were asking?
Eight people asked, and I said no. Also, in addition to two people, they asked to prepay it for a year. And I said no.
And you said it in front of everyone, and they ask in front of everyone.
Exactly. So I figure if they can ask, I can turn around and say no.
We have a coin-operated washer and dryer in the garage. No parking, it's just street parking.
The line in the kitchen is moving fast. Darlene is shaking hands and moving them out the door with a mechanical smile.
Okay, so I'll fill this out and then I'll leave you with the application and my credit report.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
They pull out their resumes and fire off their credentials.
I'm in online advertising. I work for LinkedIn, which is in Mountain View. But they have an office here in San Francisco, so I'll be splitting my time between both offices.
I'm going to be working in for PayPal, so tech, I guess. And I'm looking to move to the city because the commute would be easier. I presently live in the East Bay.
In the stairwell, a young applicant sits with her mother. She nervously goes back into the apartment to add something to her application. Her brother has just arrived. He's come as backup and hopes that he can put in a few good words about his sister.
I think that's the owner over there. Yeah, if I could talk to her and see if there's anything I could tell her to let my sister rent this place, because, you know, I'm concerned for her safety and her well-being, and, you know, I'm just doing whatever I can to help her. Yeah, she's got moms here. I don't know if you talked to mom too, but essentially, she's got the whole family here, with the exception of my brother and my dad. But
okay, Gloria, thank you. No, thank you, Gloria. Okay, all right, thank you.
And just like that, the flurry of anxiety, eagerness, and awkwardness of the open house is over. The apartment once again has a vacant echo, and the lights are turned off, cabinets closed. At $1,300, most of the applicants left thinking this was a great deal. The city doesn't regulate how much a property owner can charge, just how much they can raise the rent each year once a lease is signed. So market value is really up to comparing the Craigslist postings. As for Darlene, she says the open house was a lot like speed dating. These 50 people will all be anxiously awaiting for her call. But minutes after the open house is over, she's pretty sure she's found her match.
Now, her mom came to see it. Her brother came to see it. Her sister-in-law came to see it, and she's here because they're concerned about her. Now, if you're family-orientated, you'll say, hey, I think that's cool.
Darlene decides to offer it to the young lady who brought her family. Like dating, it boils down to a gut feeling, and this landlord said she was sold by the whole package. Her steady job, family values, and her ability to pick up the bill. In San Francisco, I'm Leela Day for Cross Currents.
And you can tell us your story of looking for housing, whether it's a tale of triumph or a wail of woe. Give us a call at 415-264-7106. So just leave us a message at that number, 415-264-7106, and we'll try to feature your story on the air. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. As you heard in that last story, finding a place to live in the Bay Area can be hard even for people whose lives are stable when they start looking. If you can't stay where you are, that search becomes a lot more urgent and more necessary. That's what happened to Latricia Dillon, who goes by Dillon. Dillon's 23 years old and describes herself as a struggling everything. She was a student at the Academy of Art University, but right now she can't afford it, so she's on leave working part-time and looking for more work. Her story, which you're about to hear, is the first in a series we're calling Money Diaries, in which young people from Oakland talk about their relationship with money. Here's Dillon.
I was living with my boyfriend when I met him. You know, he was this really great guy. He was sweet and chivalrous. And so I took a chance and I got attached to him. I never want to do that again. Things changed. And our relationship took a turn for the worst. And he broke up with me. He doesn't feel the same way anymore. So I had to move. Okay. So it's 6:20 a.m. and I'm on Craigslist looking for a place to live. Our roommates or whatever, just somewhere that isn't this living room in my ex-boyfriend's apartment. Sublet in Fruitvale apartment. Looking for a new rate for my two-bedroom sunny apartment. I keep seeing all these rooms for rent for an anarchist, which isn't necessarily bad, but it's not something I necessarily want to do. So right now, I'm just trying to figure out what would be a good place for me to fit in. One spacious room for rent in three-bedroom apartment. $400, all utilities are included. Very convenient and safe. They require a deposit of $400. I don't have the money right now, and it's a little frustrating. I just don't want to be stuck somewhere. This is like my fourth time moving in 2 years. I want to be able to make it.
So it's 12:30 and I just came back from Walgreens. It wasn't a job interview. It was an assessment test. Let's just say I got dismissed. I don't know why. I just know that I am angry. I am so angry. I am tired of my existence. I am so busy trying to find work and find a place to stay, and I am completely failing. I'm so busy trying to figure out what is it that I did so wrong in a previous life for my life to suck this much. I try to be a good person. I do my best to help everyone. And it's kind of just like the universe is spitting in my face. Hi. It's the kitchen. And this is the laundry room. This terrifying place is the basement. Hallway. This is mom's room. She's not my actual mom. I just call her mom. This is my room. and this is the backyard. And Orion is somewhere in the back, just being a dog. I'm living with Shirley. I call her mom because she's been more of a mom to me than my own biological mother. I met her through my friend Courtney. She's Courtney's mom. I was talking to Courtney, and I was telling her everything that was going on, and she was just like, call mom. And so it took a really long time, but I finally just gave in and called, started crying on the phone. And she's like, you don't sound okay. I'm coming to get you right now. So I've been here since. So I have a place to stay, but now it's more of me dealing with the emotional part of having a breakup, a serious breakup. And it's my first serious breakup.
That Money Diaries piece was produced by Lisa Morehouse and Game Theory Academy, which is a financial education program for young adults. You can find out more about them at klw.org. And stay tuned for more Money Diaries in the coming weeks. Listening to Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. A lot of things can create a home. Some are emotional, the comforting presence of people we trust, and some are physical, like objects we cherish. We recently came across one such object in an unlikely situation in Half Moon Bay. Here with that story is producer Julie Kane.
All month long at sundown, people have been coming to the bluffs overlooking the Pacific Ocean and Half Moon Bay to play and listen to a baby grand piano. Originally, it belonged to Alita Otell. When her house was foreclosed, she left the piano behind. The new owner, Christina Conklin, tried to get it tuned for her kids to play, but it was beyond repair. So she called Mauro DiNucci. He calls himself Mauro Fortissimo. He's an artist, sculptor, and musician, and he likes to make things out of pianos. By the time the piano got to the field behind his house last Sunday, it had given 2 weeks of concerts on the bluff, taken a boat ride, and been coated in paraffin and lamp oil, encircled by yellow caution tape and fire extinguishers. A crowd of locals, including Alita Otell, came to hear the piano's last song and watch it burn.
My name is Mauro, M-A-U-R-O, you roll the R, Mauro Fortissimo. Was born in Argentina, I came to the country in 1980, I'm a painter, I'm a sculptor, I play actually the inside of pianos.
My name is Alita Otell, yes. This instrument came into my family's home when I was one, and it's just been with our family until very recently.
They lost their house in foreclosure, and they left the piano behind.
So first it was with my parents, and then it was with me and my children growing up, and now it belongs to Half Moon Bay, and soon it will belong to the universe, so that's...
I don't want to burn it to ashes for a couple of reasons. That wasn't my intention. I want to kind of sort of liberate the soul of the piano.
It helped me to learn an important lesson about letting go, because things are impermanent, and isn't this all about impermanence? So I'm going to be stronger after this, right?
I'm strong already.
I get nervous now, Mauro.
Very professional. Do you have a lighter pass?
Do you need it?
It's a prima volta.
That piece was produced by Julie Kane as part of Audiograph. It's our new project where we record Bay Area's signature sounds and tell you the stories behind those sounds. You all are doing an amazing job guessing our mystery sounds each week, and we want your ideas for other places we can go. Just give us a call at 415-264-7106 and let us know what you think we should record. That number again is 415-264-7106. You can also hear Julie describe her sound gathering process this Thursday at the California Historical Society. She'll be on a panel of local radio reporters who will talk about documenting rural California through audio. For more information about the event, go to kalw.org. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Hannah Baba, Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Christina Loring, Erica Moo, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Brooke Welty. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Also, thanks to City Car Share for providing an alternative transportation option to our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. And thanks to you. KALW is listener-sponsored radio. If you listen to Other Minds on KALW Fridays at 11 p.m., you probably already know that the 18th annual Other Minds Festival is this week. Performers from as far away as India are on the schedule, along with Bay Area musician Amy X. Newberg, who you're hearing right now. She'll be premiering a new work with Aaron Gervais on Saturday. Performances take place at San Francisco's Jewish Community Center. There's a panel discussion at 7 p.m., and the performance is at 8. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. Everything.